My message today is entitled Wilderness. So after hearing the text that I just read, you might be surprised that I am not going to talk about the temptation of Jesus today. Lots of ministers will go all the way back to the temptation of Adam and Eve and talk about it. After all, Lent just began this past Wednesday, and it seems pretty natural to talk about being tempted on the heels of giving up things for Lent. But I have to say, I don't really want to talk much about temptation at all, because to me, Lent isn't really about temptation and how to resist it. It's not about us white knuckling it through our cravings for caffeine, chocolate, or whatever else it is that we've chosen to do without this season. But because we get this same gospel text year after year on the first Sunday of Lent, it's understandable that we might be led to believe that the season of Lent is primarily about fasting and resisting temptation. I mean, it just makes sense with the scripture we read, right? Well, maybe. But I don't think when we do that, that we're focusing, I think that what we're doing when we do that, we're focusing on the wrong part of the story as we enter into what is 40 days of Lent. See, instead of the temptation, perhaps we should be focusing on the wilderness where it all takes place. See, this isn't just any wilderness either. It's not a place of lush green trees with shadowed canopies and rivers running through it with abundant wildlife. This is the Judean wilderness. It's a desert, a foreboding and desolate stretch of sun-scorched earth with steep barren mountains and dusty rocky soil, all of it sort of bleached by the sun to the color of bones almost. This is how Jesus enters into his own 40 days of fasting through the wilderness, the desert. So based on this story, I'd have to say Lent isn't an invitation to resist temptation. It is an invitation into the wilderness. An invitation to get lost in the desert. You see, just like temptation stories, wilderness stories have been with us since the beginning of religious history. You can even make an argument that Adam and Eve's temptation took place in a wilderness. And wilderness stories continue to play very important roles in the storytelling of our spiritual heritage. Not only that, if you have been a thoughtful Christian for any length of time, chances are that you've spent at least some time in the wilderness. Your entrance into the wilderness might have come in all kinds of different forms. May have been at the foot of a hospital bed, in a job that demands more than you can give, or maybe a job that hands you a pink slip with your paycheck on Friday. The wilderness comes through fractured relationships. At the funeral of a loved one who passes away too soon, in a chronic illness, as you move from a place you loved or move from a job you treasured. It might be one of these things, none of these things, or several of these things all at the same time. It just might be that you found faith difficult in the face of a lot of doubt. One way or another, we all find ourselves in the wilderness eventually. Now, personally, I wouldn't wish my own experience of the wilderness even on my worst enemy. It was a place of extreme disorientation and confusion, of depression, of doubt. Doubt so deep that it pushed me to the limits of my belief. It was a painful time. And I would never, ever hope for anyone to experience what I did. But at the same time, I would never, ever trade it away either. That's the paradox of a wilderness for me. The wilderness, more than anything else in my spiritual life, has made me who I am today, both as a Christian and as a minister. It was in that place, in my experience of feeling what felt like God's near absence and in darkness of my own personal doubt, that I found not just an abiding faith, but more importantly, compassion. The wilderness has a long and storied place in Christian history. It goes by many different names. St. John of the Cross termed it the dark night of the soul. Mother Teresa experienced the wilderness so profoundly that she ceased to pray to Jesus altogether and instead began to address him as the absent one. Monks and mystics have always sought out the desert as a holy place. Would we understand these giants of Christian faith to have lost their faith because of these experiences in the desolation of wilderness? I don't think so, personally. As a matter of fact, I believe it was exactly these experiences that make them such profound spiritual teachers. Stories about wilderness aren't stories of temptation, either resisting it or triumphing over it. Rather, they're stories of identity. It's a story of getting a little lost and scared and finding out who you really are. Like the Israelites who wandered for 40 years in the deserts. Like Noah and his family who holed up in a boat for 40 days. Like Moses who went to the mountaintop to meet God for 40 days. Or even Jacob who wrestled with God at midnight in the wilderness only to walk the rest of his life with a limp and a new name. Jesus' story of the wilderness doesn't actually begin with today's text, though. We're actually picking up on it midway through it. See, in my opinion, we should be starting this story with Jesus' baptism, with the stunning and sort of mystical proclamation as he comes out of the water that this is God's Son, the Beloved. The way that the story reads, it's almost as if Jesus rises up out of the baptismal waters and then just sprints straight for the desert. As a Presbyterian author and minister, Frederick Buechner, explains it, after being baptized, Jesus went off alone into the wilderness where he spent 40 days asking himself the question of what it meant to be Jesus. Only after those 40 days in the desert is Jesus finally tempted by the devil. But this is not any ordinary devil. This isn't the guy with the horns and the pitchfork kind of guy. It's not a serpent. There's really no indication that there's a physical reality behind it at all. The Greek word used here is actually diabolos, which literally means the slanderer. Now, I can only speak for myself here, but when I am in the wilderness, the loudest voice slandering me is my own. It was in those times I beat myself up and told myself all kinds of lies about how I wasn't good enough or worthy enough or talented enough or loving enough, about how I just simply wasn't enough. It seems like when we're out in the wilderness and there's nothing to rush toward to distract us and there's no other voices save the ones in our heads, that we, like Jesus, wind up facing our demons. And in doing so, we come face to face with ourselves and the lies that we tell ourselves. The great temptation in that kind of wilderness is that we will believe those lies, whether they come from ourselves or our peers or our loved ones. The great temptation is that we'll believe that we are less deserving than, less capable than, less deserving of love than anyone else. The great temptation is to lose ourselves in the wilderness rather than to find ourselves. And that, to me, is what Lent recognizes. Not just our need to resist some simple temptation. Not just our need to sacrifice deny our appetites. All those things are fine if they are spiritually helpful to you. But By my estimate, they merely scratch the surface of the season of Lent. Lent recognizes the wilderness. And it invites us to experience it and see it as not only a normal part of Christian life, but also as an important formative part of it as well. And our text today reminds us that when we find ourselves lost and wandering in the desert, it reminds us that it will be okay. That there is something better that can come out of that time. And that the pain, the struggle, and the doubt, while not in any way an enjoyable thing, are helping us to know ourselves better in a way that only the wildernesses of life can do.